You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
All right, let's go. It is the Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com as well. Seattle Sports app, wherever you find us, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts. Maybe you're listening to this a month from now. Who the heck knows? The world is your oyster. You can be listening to this anytime you want. Good morning, and hope you are having a good day. Justin, Maura, hello. How's everybody doing?
Hello, sir.
Well, yeah. Yeah, hello.
How are you
is
doing?
Right.
How are you
well,
doing?
2 days in a row, Justin. I come in here not real wild about the way things went yesterday. And while yesterday didn't have quite the same kind of frustration value that that Monday did for me, it still wasn't great. I mean, you know, there's something going on with this Mariners team that is not what we predicted it would be, and I'm not entirely sure what to do to change it, if that makes sense. They had another kind of just down day with the bats. Obviously, they get shut out. It's kind of easy to point the finger at one guy yesterday and Steven Souza because he really had a rough day at the office,
yeah.
Right? Has a big moment, comes up with the bases loaded and one out, chance to give Logan Gilbert the lead, and he already looks nasty. Like, if he comes up with a base hit there or a walk, I mean, Barrios was all over the map, right? It walked a few guys, didn't have his command.
First pitch swinging.
Ugh.
Give me a quality at, but can I buy a quality at bat?
We were talking yesterday about things that drive you absolutely crazy in sports, and I have one that's not fair, okay?
Okay.
I have a lot of things that are fair, right? Like Joe, I agree with him. The man on third, less than two outs, drives me crazy. Just drives me crazy. Making the first or third out, right, at home plate, at third base, drives me crazy. All those things. And the game has changed a little bit on those. So because of the advent of the strike, not the advent, but the immersion of the strikeout as the biggest thing in baseball, like I can kind of understand how some of those sort of old adages have changed a little bit. But this one is unfair because it's like left over from my little league days. But it drives me nuts when a pitcher, especially a reliever, but a pitcher can't find the plate. And the next guy swings at the first pitch.
Oh, yep.
It after a walk, the idea of swinging, especially multiple walks, like dude's all over the place and you decide to swing at the first pitch. I know this is left over from Little League where, you know, hey, Zach Zito is a pretty good pitcher, but we had a 5-run lead in the bottom of the sixth and the dude walked in 5 straight runs. Like, hey, that'll happen. Love Zach. Great kid. Best video game player I knew when we were young. Have no idea where he is right now. But that kid walked in 5 straight runs and we had a 5-run lead. And like, that's always kind of like, if they'd swung at the first pitch, maybe we win that game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that has always sort of stuck with me. And I know that it's unfair to ascribe that same level of, you know, wildness concern to major leaguers, but Barrios didn't have it. He had lost it, right? He'd given up a hit. He'd given up a couple of walks. He didn't have it. And to swing at the first pitch, ground into a double play, was terrible. And then to go out there in the field an inning later after, you know, screwing it up and immediately misplaying a ball to right field that gets Gilbert out of that inning and turns it into a not even, okay, fine, you misplay it, you aren't able to make the play, you give up a run, fine. But he misplayed it into a bases clearing triple.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, you can't do that. Now, you can get away with it if you're Jesse Winker, and you're a big part of this team moving forward, right? And they've paid you a lot of money, et cetera. You can get away with it if you are, you can get away with it if you're Julio, right? All right, it's part of the learning process, and okay, this is how it goes.
Rookie contribute in other ways,
right? Yeah. He's got so much, you know, room and runway in front of him. That all right, fine. The kid had a bad day. What are you going to do? Okay, fine. But when you're essentially a 4A player at this stage in your career, which is what Steven Souza Jr. is, you're replaceable by any number of other guys who are out there. Any number of other guys, right?
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, that's a DFA experience, right? I've seen it before. You know who was a really nice guy? He was with the Mariners for a brief time in 2009 or 10, maybe both. Do you remember the name Ryan Langerhans?
So I do.
Really, really nice guy. Awesome guy. He's from Austin, Texas. I love talking to him. Just a pleasant, easygoing,
lefty.
Good dude. Yeah, he played center field. He came up with the Braves. He played some center field. I saw him briefly and covered him for like 4 days when he came to Boston. Had like a misplay in center field and got DFA'd like the next day. It was like, well, hey, man, sorry. This team's in a pennant race, and unfortunately, no one has room for you to make a mistake because you're not good enough to provide in other ways. And he came to Seattle and ended up having a couple of pretty good years, and good for him. He kind of got it figured out after that. But I was thinking about him last night as I watched Souza. Like, there's no reason to have patience for that, right? I understand that patience is important, and there are times to kind of stick with your guys, right? They gave Kelnick all kinds of by the way, if Jared Kelnick's in the game last night, decent chance they win.
Every baseball fan probably had that in their mind.
Right.
I think Kelnick makes that play, or at least makes a better route to the ball in that
right.
play.
Yeah, I mean, he got fooled off the bat, right? It was a bit of a broken bat, and I know those things happen. Like, I get it. Like, I can see why it happens, but unfortunately, you're a professional baseball player. Mm-hmm. The excuses that would work for you and me don't work for a professional ball player, and I promise that I wouldn't make this whole segment about Steven Souza, because obviously there's more the team could have done in the other 8 innings, but unfortunately, crucial double play with a bad process attached to it, followed by a complete misplay and disaster in right field. That's the ball game, folks. Like, it all turns on those 2 moments, and unfortunately, he was on the wrong side of both of them, and he doesn't have the track record or the upside to keep him around. So if I'm Jerry DePoto, am I making a move today? Yeah, I probably am. I don't know whether he will. I don't know whether he's got another option that he can bring up. I mean, I guess Billy Hamilton.
I was just going to ask,
like,
is Billy Hamilton worth it?
Billy Hamilton can't even hit a AAA where everybody hits. I mean, unfortunately for Billy, he's fast, but he's never just had the ability to hit. And that's not what this team needs right now. I started looking around, and there are other names out there. If you want to kind of find like a reasonable replacement there, a name that I would throw out, and he's had some off-field issues, so I don't really want to get into those necessarily, but the type of player anyway that you could find is like a Kevin Pillar, who right now is in AAA with the Dodgers. They signed him late as his free agent. He's been okay at AAA for them. And this guy who had an 800 OPS as recently as 2020, right? He's 33 years old this year. So it's not like he's a long-term solution for you. But could he capably come in and play right field for the next couple of weeks until Lewis is ready or until eventually Mitch Haniger comes back? Well, I would hope he could do it better than Steven Souza's been doing it, right?
I totally agree. Can I add one thing that drives you crazy? A leadoff walk. A leadoff walk somehow always scores and drives me absolutely bonkers crazy.
Yeah.
But I fully agree with you on Kevin Pillar and the Stevens. If he came off the field and was like, all the scouting I saw that first pitch was the pitch I was supposed to take. I maybe would feel a little bit better that you had a plan, because I also don't want to see him up there with this bat on his shoulder for 3 pitches either, right? So I'm torn as a baseball fan on the, I want you to have a game plan and swing the bat, and if you think, and you know, which I feel like he has to have had some kind of conversation in the dugout beforehand of, listen, probably the only pitch you're going to get here is the first pitch. If that happened, I would feel better about it.
I don't know. That's a good point, and certainly, you know, we could hear something like that. That's absolutely possible, and that's why you should always be a little careful kind of going in on one player or one play or whatever. You're absolutely right about that, Justin. In this case, it's hard to imagine with Barrios struggling the way he was, right? And if he does sit on 3 pitches and take 3 strikes, great. At least somebody else has an opportunity to drive in the run.
Yeah.
I mean, to roll over into an easy double play like that is just, regardless of the scouting, you got to, at that point, then you've got to execute. And he didn't do that. So, look, some text coming in. We shouldn't be relying on Souza. You're right. And it's not that they're relying on him, right? It's not like he's hitting fourth and you're like, man, this guy's really the future here. But you do need him to hold down the fort for another couple of weeks here. And if he can't do it, find somebody else who can. Texter says, where's Taylor Trammell? Why not him? He's hurt. Unfortunately, yeah, I think they probably would have preferred to have Taylor Trammell, but he had some injury issues this year and he's not available. So kind of where the Mariners are at right now. Jerry DePoto is going to have some decisions to make, I believe, in terms of what he wants to do now moving forward and what he can change to try to shake this up. Because getting shut out again last night, unfortunately, you just can't have it with the stretch that they're in. So, hey, speaking of the Mariners, I do want to let you know, Monday, May 23rd, 6:40 against the A's. That is the Title IX 50th anniversary celebration. Ticket special, access to a pregame panel hosted by one of our favorites, Root Sports, Angie Mentink, who does a great job with things like this. You can get tickets at mariners.com/Title IX. And yes, Title IX is with Roman numerals IX. All right, coming up next, high praise yesterday for the Seahawks. I think every fan will want to hear this. We'll do it next. Mike Salk showing here on Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
It's rare for the outcome of a game to turn so heavily on the play of one position player, but unfortunately, that's what we got from Steven Souza yesterday in Toronto. Two plays, two in a span of about 10 minutes. The first, reckon their best offensive chance of the night, bases loaded, one out, a struggling Barrios searching for his command. And Souza helps him out by swinging at the first pitch. He sees and grounds into an inning-ending double play. That didn't help, but a half an inning later, Logan Gilbert, one out away from getting out of his own bases-loaded jam when Souza struck again.
Infield back left side, next off of the way, swinging a fly ball into shallow right field. Souza racing in on the run, dives, and he can't get to it. It's going to drop in. Kirk will score. Chapman will score. Ronnie third, heading home. Is Espinal the throw to third? Diving into third and safe at third base is Springer. Everybody scores for the Blue Jays. They have a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, that was going to be it. Unfortunately, the only three runs of the game, they obviously hurt. I know you can't blame one player. Certainly the Mariners could have scored in the other eight innings, but man, tough night for a recent call-up trying to prove he still belongs in this league. Through a week, he may be proving that he does not. Focus on a little bit of the positive. A really great night for Logan Gilbert. 7 innings, 9 strikeouts. Touch 99. What an incredible weapon he's becoming. In fact, set his own career high for Ks.
Here comes the 2-2 from Gilbert. The pitch. Strike three called on a slider. 9 strikeouts for Logan Gilbert. Ties his season best. And 9 against the Phillies. So back-to-back games with 9 strikeouts for the big right-hander.
Yeah, he was just tremendous again last night. Unfortunately, goes to waste. Shut out for the 6th time this year. Now 2-3 in this crucial road trip. One more game today in Toronto before they head to Boston. Marco Gonzalez against Kevin Gausman, who, by the way, has been very good. So what do you do? What do you do if you're Scott Service? I don't know what you can do. No amount of lineup juggling is going to fix this offense. Now, if you're Jerry DePoto, I guess I'd start with considering removing Souza from the roster. That was just an unacceptable performance in what might turn out to be an unacceptable week. I saw calls for Will Myers, other potentially available players. I'm not necessarily against it. The team does need some steady veteran presence. But again, I'd be really careful giving up more prospects, especially at this time of the year when you're likely to overpay. By the way, another home run in the minors. Kyle Lewis went deep last night for Tacoma. He went 2-for-5 with 5 driven in. But again, still only playing DH, so hard to know whether or not he's going to be ready to come back anytime soon.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, how about some rave reviews of the Seahawks draft from at least one credible source? This is former Seahawks scout who's the current head of the Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy. He took to Twitter yesterday to say what others have as well, that this was the best Seahawks draft class in a decade. Good. Well, he had especially high praise for Boye Mafe, who he said thinks has a long-term double-digit sack potential, could contribute immediately in sub-packages as well. Talked about Abe Lucas as a day-one starter. Kobe Bryant as a top-three corner immediately as a rookie. That would be awesome. And then as a long-term prospect with high upside, how about Tariq Woolen, a guy he went a little bit more in-depth with when he was on last week with Jake and Stacey?
Tariq Woolen's a freak. Kind of goes back to the prototype Pete Carroll corner. And, you know, at minimum, he's going to be an awesome special teams player right out of the chute. And again, in 2 or 3 years down the road, I mean, I'm excited about what he could be. I was really surprised he lasted that long.
Yeah, that's a really nice pickup for the Seahawks and obviously huge, huge upside without much risk. He also wrote about Tyreek Smith, an underrated kind of feisty player on the edge. And one of my personal favorites from this draft class, Bo Melton, a guy who he described as, and I love this, both fast and quick, right? That means when you get him out in space, he can outrun you, but he also has that sort of short area quickness to maybe play inside as a slot receiver and challenge a guy like Freddie Swain for some immediate playing time. One of the most exciting, I'm excited for him as a rookie to see what he can do coming out of Rutgers.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Complete and total domination. That best describes the third quarter Miami used to come roaring back and take game one of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA last night, outscoring the Celtics 34-14. Boston never had an answer. 41 points for Jimmy Butler as the Heat take a 1-0 series lead. Did I see Jimmy Butler's never scored 40 in the regular season? And that was, I believe, the fifth time he's done it now in the postseason. So, yeah, he steps up. Congratulations to the Magic. They somehow had the right ping pong ball. They win the NBA draft lottery. Might not be a year with, like, a guaranteed LeBron James kind of superstar, but they will have their pick of the litter. Oklahoma City, Houston, Sacramento round out the top four. Two series underway in the NHL. Tampa all over Florida for a 4-1 win. Colorado takes game one from St. Louis. And then we're a day away from what promises to be a PGA championship full of cool storylines. I watched Tiger's presser yesterday as he was kind of crushing Phil. Also feels like his own conditioning let him down at Augusta, but that he'll be in better shape now. He says he can challenge and win. There you go. It's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour.
I've got a couple small, maybe hopefully bright spots for Mariners fans to mention at least. We talked about this during the break. Evan White will start a rehab stint with Tacoma on Wednesday.
Nice.
And Kyle Lewis drives in 5 runs with a 3-run home run and a double yesterday with a win over the Sacramento River Cats.
Yeah, I mentioned Kyle Lewis there. I don't know whether, you know, again, he's only DHing. He doesn't seem to be playing every day, right? It's sort of taking a day off after he plays. Love the way he's hitting. And again, it just shows you the kind of talent that he has. But if you can't put it together and stay on the field, you know, again, I don't know that he's ready to come back and help the team. And even beyond that, Justin, I feel really uncomfortable putting that on him, right? Like to come back and be the savior to this offense. I really hoped that when he was ready to return, you'd be trying to figure out how you were going to slot him in rather than looking at him as a savior, because he really shouldn't be a savior at this point in his career.
Yeah, you're totally right. But, I mean, I thought about it last night there. I was like, can we pinch hit? Who do we have to pinch hit for Souza? That moment. I said it out loud. I really hope he doesn't roll over.
Oh,
and
really?
It lasted about 8 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Until it happened.
You were thinking it that early in the
absolutely.
Game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you want one of we've seen how few and far between these, like, chances to get some runs back have been happening, especially with how poorly the offense has been able to do with runners in scoring position. So it's like, we have this one opportunity here.
I mean, that's Torrens. I mean, if that's what you want to do, you probably need to pinch hit Torrens there, mm-hmm. right?
He's another righty. So early in the game.
Well, right. If you're going to be pinch hitting Torrens, it's hard to imagine at that point why you're even playing Souza, right? If you're going to pinch hit for him that early in a game. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's a good reason to not have him on the team and say, hey, if you can't come up and we can't trust you in a situation like that, then there's really just no value here. If there's defensive problems, offensive problems, et cetera, yeah, it's probably just not a guy that you want to keep around your team at that point. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you're right. Torrens probably would have been the option there, and then you throw Dylan Moore in a right field. But it's so early in the game to do that, right? And at the time, there's no score. You don't know what's going to happen in the bottom half of that inning where he's going to misplay the fly ball. So, yeah, it's a rough day, man. That's DFA worthy, I would say.
But at least I'm a little bit of positive seeing the Kyle Lewis and Evan White stuff.
Even I love the Kyle Lewis stuff, and I'm happy for Evan White. I don't know where he plays on this team. I mean, maybe he's a right fielder. Maybe he can play a little bit outfield. Certainly athletic enough, but Yeah, that's kind of where you're at right now. All right, let's see. Coming up next here, we'll kind of shift some gears. Had a great conversation yesterday with our buddy Joe Fan. He's got some fiery thoughts on the Mariners, not to mention a pretty good take on Pete Carroll and the Seahawks. So let's do that next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to The Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Joe Fan joins me as he does every week. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Let me ask you a question. What gets under your skin as a sports fan?
What gets under my skin as a sports fan? A runner at third, less than 2 outs, and not being able to get him in.
Yeah, that one's tough. That one's pretty frustrating. Yeah. Okay. Other things?
Man, that is for sure my number one baseball pet peeve. You know what? I don't have anything. That's my number one.
How do you feel about
trying to come up with something lesser?
How do you feel about former players for your team who weren't that good beating your team by being great for someone else?
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, there are a lot of Mariners players who have had really good seasons so far. You know, you look at Ben Gamel in Pittsburgh sitting over 300, being a really good player. Yeah, the Kikuchi thing on Monday is tough. That's a tough one to swallow when your lineup has Abraham Toro batting leadoff and, you know, you're missing a bunch of guys and Chris Flexen's battling for you. And once again, you're unable to score for him. And Kikuchi looked like the best left-handed starter in baseball. It's tough.
That one got me last night. I got to tell you, I'm with you on the man on third, less than two outs thing. Although I'm trying to get less mad about that in modern baseball because there's just so many strikeouts. The game is just different than it used to be, right? There's so many more strikeouts that it's not as simple to get that guy in as it used to be, but I'm with you. That drives me nuts. Yesterday made me as annoyed as I've been watching this team this year. It's like really the first time I've been bothered watching them. And I think it was just the Kikuchi effect of like, geesh. I know that he did that at times, especially early last year where he was an all-star and pitched really well. But by the end of last year, he was persona non grata. To come back and do that was just too much for me last night.
I mean, he's throwing fastballs at upper 90s. He made Steven Souza look silly in a huge spot. Yep. And, you know, I guess that's what you expect when you've got, you know, guys coming up from AAA trying to help you out in the pinch. You know, because your lineup's decimated. But yeah, it absolutely stings. And I think there's just so many examples of that. You know, whether you look at Nestor Cortez in New York, where he's a guy the Mariners didn't even want, and now he's a Cy Young candidate. And,
yeah, I can handle that one, though. Like, that guy was sort of passed around for a while, and then somebody kind of figured him out. Right? I can understand that.
The Mariners that ever figure him
out. Well, that's Paul Sewald.
They've done that a lot. They've done that with the bullpen. I get it. I know, Salk, you're going to jump down. I know. I get it.
Because that's not a fair criticism. That does happen to literally every team. And I think in the last few years, the Mariners have been better about that. Ty France, Matt Brash, Paul Sewald. Like, I would say they've actually got a pretty decent record of taking some cast-offs and actually turning them into pretty good players.
They do. They do. And again, a lot of that stuff is unfair. But again, when you're, you know, trying to follow a team and watch every game of a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 20 years, it's so easy to point out every little thing and be like, yeah, of course it's that way because the Mariners. Mm. But yeah, the Kikuchi thing was wild. And if he, and, you know, he's seen, by all accounts, he's an awesome dude, a great teammate, and I'm rooting for him to be successful. But, you know, the way he just felt so dominant on Monday and the poor, non-competitive at bats, the inability to get, you know, a base hit till what, the fourth or fifth inning. It was tough to watch from a team that's now 16-20 and seven games out of the division already on May 17th.
Do you think Shane Waldron could turn, and we're going to talk more about this throughout the morning, do you think Shane Waldron could turn Drew Locke into Jared Goff?
Man, that would be huge for his potential of getting a head coaching job. No, I mean, Drew Locke, I get he wasn't like a day three draft pick, undrafted free agent, but Jared Goff was the number one overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
So turning him into Jared Goff, I don't think should be trivialized. And I think it's easy to Jared Goff had just goofy plays where he was called Jared Goof, and the end of his time in Los Angeles was really bad. But Jared Goff was semi-serviceable in Detroit last year for a really bad team without much in the way of pass catchers. He was outstanding in a number of different years. And you can put a lot of that on Sean McVay. That's fine. But I don't think we can trivialize, like, oh, just have him be Jared Goff. Just have him be an above-average starter in the NFL. So if he can do it, I think it'll be an incredible accomplishment that would need to be celebrated far and wide.
Yeah.
I just want to set the bar of, like, that's just not, like, a low ask.
No, but they do have some similar traits, which I find interesting, right? They both kind of, throw, you know, move around in the pocket a little bit. They both have big arms. They both had some challenges with their leadership and with some of their decision-making. I think the difference is probably that Goff's a little bit more accurate than Drew Locke has shown in his career, but it's interesting how the whole McVay system seemed to at least bring the best out of Goff for a while. The guy made a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And so I think that should be, you know, if there's a pie in the sky goal for what Drew Lock could be, that should be it. And if he can play like Jared Goff, especially a version of Jared Goff that protects the football better. I know that was such a thing with Sean McVay of, my goodness, you know, these turnovers can't be happening in years 3, 4, 5 and all that. Then that'd be huge, because I think you look at what Seattle has done, you know, at the running back position, at the offensive line, that this should be a running game that's very productive. And yeah, you throw Jared Goff under center there and you can do much worse, especially if we're talking about good Jared Goff. Yeah. So yeah, I've seen the conversation around Shane Waldron and what's possible for him. To me, you know, I think he's fighting an uphill battle of, yeah, maybe he does get more comfortable in year two, but I don't know how you can get to a point where, you know, leading an offense and calling plays for an offense with Drew Lock instead of Russell Wilson makes his job any easier. But I am eager to see what he's got at stake. And I think ultimately this is sort of a, you know, he's playing with house money a little bit because of that. And so if he's able to show anything from, if he's able to get anything out of Drew Lock, then you say, oh, okay, Seattle might have something here in terms of a future offensive mind on the rise.
Well, and it tells you if he can, that if you get somebody who maybe even a little bit more talented, all of a sudden, you know, you may have something. And, I, you know, looking at the numbers, if the Seahawks were to finish, you know, kind of according to their over-under numbers with roughly the 6th or 7th pick in the draft, and the Broncos end up at around the 20th, 21st pick in the draft, you know, you add those two values up, you could probably get into the top 3 next year.
Yeah, I agree. Again, with Shane Waldron, if you're able to get anything better than what he showed in Denver, because, I mean, most of the league, whether it's, you know, national media, whoever, I don't think anyone's really expecting anything from Drew Lock. And so if you're able to get anything above that, again, so to me, playing with house money a little bit, because if he stinks, it's like, well, what was Shane Waldron supposed to do? It's Drew Lock. He's a bust. And so I totally agree with you. And yeah, if you can set yourself up to where you show signs of hope and like you're competent and you can be competitive on most weeks, especially in your division where you're not getting your butt kicked by your rivals, then all of a sudden you have a top 10 pick. You can potentially move up and you feel really good about the trajectory of where things are headed. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating because the bar of in which this, the metrics in which the Seahawks are judged by this year are totally different than we're used to over the last 10 plus years.
Joe, good stuff. Are we ready for the PGA Championship this weekend?
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. Big shout out. Keep an eye out for Jesse Mueller. He won the PGA Championship. It's like the PGA Instructors Championship.
Like the tour pro.
PGA members from around all the courses, yeah. Like the head pros.
I watched a bunch of that.
And he won it. And he's one of my good buddies, like best friends.
Cool.
And so I'm going to be rooting for my guy Jesse Mueller this weekend.
All right, I'll be rooting for Jordan Spieth. We'll see who does better.
Yeah, well, I got a pretty good idea of who that will be. But tell your boy Jordan Spieth to stop missing four-footers.
Oh, please. He had a great weekend, dude. He won his last tournament, came in second after K.H. Lee went nuts. How dare you? How dare you insult Jordan on this show? He will not
be
impugned.
That's on me as a guest.
He will not be impugned on this show. Joe, thank you. We'll talk next week.
See you, Mike.
All right, there's Joe Fan, who joins me every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. You can usually hear it Wednesday morning at 6:30 as well. All right, allow me just a moment or two of golf talk, and then I promise we'll move on quickly because, so Jordan's going to win the PGA Championship. Let me just state that outright.
Okay.
He is going to win the PGA Championship this weekend, and I'm not the only one saying that. I mean, if you look at experts and people who know what they're talking about, Jason Sobel, who covered golf for a long time for ESPN, is now with the Action Network, does all the kind of betting odds stuff related to the sport. He was asked to pick one outright winner to win the tournament. Who did he take? Jordan Spieth. That's right.
I'm confused, though, because you told me that his attire has direct correlation to him winning, and you just told me that he's wearing a trash outfit.
Is bad. You know, Maura, you're right, and this is sort of the challenge I wanted to. Hoping to avoid, because Jordan's playing great. In his last two tournaments, he finished first and second. This is the one spot that he's got to win a PGA championship in order to complete his career Grand Slam. This course in particular is like perfectly set up for him. He's driving the ball better than he ever has in his career, but this is a course that puts a premium on chipping and your work around the greens, and there is nobody better, especially in a major around the greens, than Jordan is. So, yeah, everything is set up for him right now, not that far from his hometown, right? It's in Tulsa, not that far from Dallas. Everything is set up for Jordan to finally complete the career Grand Slam. He's playing really good golf after a three-year journey to completely remake his swing. And then earlier this year, he had this like really weird, long like routine beforehand. It was kind of hard to watch. He's got that figured out. He's dialed in. He's ready to win, except he's being held captive by Under Armour and the deal he has with them. They put him in the worst clothing you've ever seen. It's just terrible. How can you play golf like that?
So there is a scapegoat here. And he has to win with Tiger and Rory by him for
the first two days. Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, what an unbelievable
no pressure.
Group. Dude, how about the PGA though? They put arguably the three biggest draws in the game together. Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods. They put the top three players in the world together as well. John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, and Colin Morikawa. So, like, they always have fun with their pairings, but that should make it just extra cool this weekend. And then I was texting back and forth with a guy named Travis Fulton, who is a big Seattle fan, especially a Mariners fan, huge Mariners fan. He works as a PGA pro in Jacksonville. Cool. And he told me straight up yesterday, Jordan wins. Look for Jordan and Justin Thomas together in the final pairing, and Jordan wins this thing. So to say I'm excited for the weekend is, probably not even an exaggeration.
Does it affect your mood as much as the Mariners or the Seahawks?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately. I wish it did. I'd be in a better mood. Just because it doesn't have the, like, first of all, it doesn't have the work stress associated with it, right? Yeah. Like, if Jordan chokes on Sunday and, you know, as Joe says, misses a four-footer, I don't really have to come in and talk about it the next day, right? There's no specific pressure on me. So, yeah, it doesn't have the daily up and down. But in the moment, yeah, I mean, when Jordan's in it, it'll keep me from napping. Let's just say that. All right. That's pretty significant. And as I was napping yesterday, I was watching Tiger yesterday as he had his long press conference. First of all, no love lost for Phil. Right. So this whole thing with Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, how they've sort of, you know, emerged as friends. Right. And they did all the betting stuff with the match and all that.
It's performative.
Complete performance.
OK.
They can't stand each other. And Tiger's asked about Phil not being there, and he's like, yeah, it's kind of on him. Like,
oh, I have the sound if you want that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. Play it. I mean, you can hear it in the tone of his voice. He's like, I didn't even really want to be talking about this, but okay, fine. You bring up Phil. I guess I have to answer. And basically, if you could distill his answer into a couple words, he's saying, screw that guy.
It's always disappointing when the defending champion's not here. Phil has said some things that I think a lot of us who are committed to the tour and committed to the legacy of the tour have pushed back against, and he's taken some personal time, and we all understand that, but I think that some of his views and how the tour could be run and should be run, been a lot of disagreement there.
Yeah, he doesn't even get into like the Khashoggi stuff or any of it. He's just like, yeah, we disagree. And then they asked him later, oh, did you reach out to him? I know you guys have reached out to each other before. He's like, yeah, no. it was brutal, man. He's like, yeah, no, I didn't do that. And then they asked him whether he was ready to win. He's like, yeah, I'm going to win this thing. So, I don't know. Going to be a pretty fun weekend in Tulsa watching those guys.
You had your golf moments.
Well, I was going to use one more golf moment to lead into another conversation. So, Brooks Koepka, by far not my favorite person on the tour. Don't really care for him at all. But Brooks was apparently a little bit late to his scheduled meeting with the media. Why? Because he did something that this dad can relate to.
So we're not at the press conference because we've started the car, put the keys in it, went and put the bag in the back. Somewhere back there. I don't know if you can see. And literally, the car is locked. The car is locked. Keys to the green lanyard. So, not going.
Yeah. So he locked his keys in his car, missed his press conference. Now, if anybody were to do, like, that seems like something Belichick would do. Be like, oh, yeah, no, lock the keys in the car. Sorry, can't make it. Man, my bad.
Which and also means it's an old car, because modern cars, you can't even lock your keys
in your car. So that's the point I was going to make. So, Justin, first of all, I think Brooks is lying. I think he just didn't want to do this, and that's fine. Second of all, I did this when I was in Phoenix at my parents' house over spring break. We were supposed to rent an SUV, and when we got to the rental counter, if you've ever been to the rental counter in Phoenix, there's no worse place in the entire world. It is the seventh circle of hell.
I've heard that.
After you've traveled miles and miles on this stupid hot bus to get to their rental car place, the lines go forever and ever. And so I'd kind of worked it out ahead of time, and I went downstairs and I figured I'd jump the line and like, oh yeah, no, we don't have any more SUVs. Like, okay, how long is it going to be? Oh, at least an hour and a half. Like, all right. Like, oh, we can give you a minivan.
You're like, fine. As long as you get me out of here.
Yeah, I kind of like a minivan, right? We got the kids, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. So I take the minivan. I didn't know it was going to be like a 1984 Dodge Caravan. Like, oh,
no way.
Thanks. Yeah. Does it have Bluetooth? No. Does it, like, it didn't have anything.
It's an AM, FM radio.
Yeah, and AM radios, we all know, is passe. Like, nobody listens to that anymore.
Did it have a cassette tape deck?
No, it didn't, thankfully. But I literally locked the keys in it. I turned the car on because I was all excited. I was going to kind of cool it down before we all got going on to go to dinner.
Yeah.
And I, didn't think about it. I must have locked it somehow, got out, shut the door, went inside, came back out, totally locked. And there's no way to, like, open up a modern car. Well, it's not that modern, but a semi-modern car. So we had to call AAA.
I'm looking at a picture of this. It was a PGA championship vehicle. Like, there's a PGA logo on the side. So they had an employee come bring an extra key. It looks like, I don't know, maybe an Escalade or something.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't sound too bad. I'm surprised that will lock.
Me too. When I bought my new car, they're like, you can't lock your keys in it if you want to.
Right. You and I both have Kias. Yeah. And so maybe it's a Kia thing, but, like, literally, you can't lock your keys in it. If you try to lock the car or shut the door while the keys are in it, it, like, beeps at you and says it won't lock.
Yep.
Yeah. Why did that? Well, anyway, Brooks, apparently, we have better cars than Brooks Koepka.
Well, did it
despite the, like, $15 million he wins a year.
Did it make you late to whatever you were doing in Phoenix?
We were just getting dinner.
Did you miss a press conference?
No, thankfully, we were just getting dinner. It wasn't too serious. But I was super embarrassed, and I know you give me grief about having AAA. What do you do in that situation if you don't have AAA?
It's a good point. You just have to eat the whatever it's cost you for the locksmith.
Oh, I have AAA. I had an issue there when I got my new car for some reason, like two or three different times in one year I left my lights on.
So
AAA's come and jumped me a few times. Yeah.
So I've been late to things like that. I don't know about ever for like a reason. I mean, I went years ago to when I was working in politics and I hated my job, I essentially snuck out like a little bit early from work to fly from L.A. to Oakland to watch game one of the 2003 ALDS between the Red Sox and A's. Uh-huh. And I had a plan. My buddy Mike and I went up there together. We had a hotel, and we were going to fly back super early the next morning, and I was going to go straight to work and be there by, like, maybe a little late.
No way.
But by, like, 9:30.
No way.
Well, we went up there, and sure enough, the Red Sox lost in the final moments, and he and I went back to this hotel and must have had, 30 beers or whatever. I mean, like, completely slept through our alarms, woke up at literally the time the plane was supposed to be leaving, ran to the airport, didn't get out until, we probably got back at, like, 12. My boss was so mad at me, and then later that afternoon, I walked across the street from our office to watch game two. I can't be here. I gotta have to go across the street because this is ridiculous.
Anybody who's ever had that plan of like, yeah, it'll be fine. We'll get the early flight home. It's gonna work.
Stupid.
It's almost never worked.
Yeah, you ever miss anything? Maura, I know you have, sadly, and this is not like you.
Yeah, well, yeah, because I think I asked you guys the question when I sent this Koepka story, like, what have you made yourself late for? I one time missed a flight when I was already in the airport. It was sad because I was going to Mexico on vacation.
What?
How is that even possible?
So one of our friends dropped us off, like, pretty early, like, on his way to work at 5 a.m., me and another one of my friends that was going to Mexico. And that guy, Donnie, was flying on a different airline. So I thought I had plenty of time. We sat down, had breakfast, had coffee. Donnie went to get on his flight because his was a little earlier. I said goodbye. DIA used to be a lot harder to get through, and I guess I hadn't flown it that much at that point. they're way better with their security checkpoints now, but it took me forever to get through security, and then you have to take a train to your gate.
Yeah. Denver's a weird airport.
So, yeah, I get to my gate, and they're like, oh, no, plane already boarded. Sorry, I had to watch it.
Oh,
I had to watch it pull
no.
away.
Oh,
and then
terrible.
I had to, and I couldn't get a flight till the next day, so I missed a full day of vacation in Mexico.
In Mexico,
so and I was at the airport.
Right, it
my
can't
flight.
Be like when you're flying to New Jersey for work or something. It's got to be like when you're going to vacation in Mexico.
That's so,
bad, Justin. I can imagine this has happened to you what 30 or 40 times in your life.
No, you would think I'm pretty punctual on this kind of stuff. I've the only time I've missed anything like that for a flight was I was going to a wedding in Montana and. I was going to take the Amtrak, which from Seattle to Libby is like a 12-hour
right.
train. So I was like, oh, I'll just get a yellow cab down to King Street Station and take off. This is pre-Uber and everything, where it was just like, I hope they show up. And if they don't, I'm just going to call somebody for 45 minutes. Of course, they didn't show up. They missed it. So I had to fly to Spokane. I spent like $450 on a plane ticket to Spokane. And then you still either have to rent a car from there to drive the 3 hours to Libby or have someone come pick you up. So it's a major inconvenience for everyone. And yeah, my parents.
You're like, I am your wedding present.
Yeah, I called my family and I was like, hey, you guys doing anything in 4 hours? Would you like to leave the house right now?
Oh my God.
And come get me in Spokane.
Whose wedding was this?
Oh, it was like I call him my second dad. It was basically like my.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you make it?
Yeah, I made it, but. It was an expensive mistake.
Planes, trains, and automobiles, though.
I did everything.
I've never done this, but I know multiple people who've had issues with, like, not renewing a passport or that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, I've told you about the one guy who punched me in the head at a party in San Diego. So that same guy earlier that year was supposed to, like, I don't know if he was, like, traveling abroad or if he was actually, like, taking a semester abroad. But he got to wherever he was going and realized in Europe that he didn't have a passport. And they were like,
what?
Yeah, he literally got, they let him somehow get on the plane and see, he got all the way to, I forget what country it was. And he's in Europe. And of course, they detain him because he doesn't have a passport.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was there for a while. I don't know whether he ever made it to where he was supposed to go. But yeah, get your passport done ahead of time. Trust me, it'll make things go a whole lot smoother. So, all right, good stuff. And yeah, but a lot of people wondering how anyone could be a AAA naysayer.
I'm not a AAA naysayer.
You kind of are. Do you have AAA?
I do have AAA.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a naysayer. That's not. I don't. Think
I thought you were saying nay.
No. That's not true.
You just would change your own tire.
I can change my own tires.
But rather than doing it, I also don't
run out of gas because I'm an adult and I can see when I'm close
to. I've never run out of gas. I think that's super embarrassing. Never run out of gas.
I've never done that. I've been on a work trip with a friend where she was driving. We had to drive a U-Haul to go to different cities and set stuff up, and she let our U-Haul run out of gas.
That's super embarrassing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never done
that. It's unacceptable.
Either. All right. Speaking of embarrassing, that was the Mariners once again last night, and one guy who's got himself square in the spotlight. If you're Jerry DePoto, how much do you try to help your struggling club? We'll figure that out together next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, SeattleSports.com.